This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, good evening. Welcome to tonight's shiur. So the first shiur is a somewhat of a continuation of last week, but standalone. And it's entitled Yishmael Yisrael and the Challenge of Tefillah. I mentioned last week, of course, we find ourselves in a very challenging situation. And I mentioned the pasuk from Parshas Balak, Oymi Yichya Misumay Kel, and that's a reference to the fact, says the Pirkei Rabbeinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu places his name in Yishmael and Yisrael, alluding to the Koach HaTefillah of Yishmael, and perhaps one of the ways to counter the dangers of the time is through Tefillah. And last week we focused on the power of Tefillah, with the various ideas and thoughts that we shared last week. What I want to focus on tonight is a different aspect, the challenge of Tefillah. Why is it that we find Tefillah so difficult? The Gemara says in Brachos, if you look at the second page of your handout, this is if you're listening online, email me please at j.golker@gmail.com, I'll send you the handout. The Gemara in Brachos, Daf Lamed Beis, Amud Beis, acknowledges the challenge of Tefillah. The Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, Arba'a Tzrichim Chizuk. There are four things which need constant sort of focus and efforts and encouragement. And one of them is, of course, Tefillah. And it needs constant strengthening. Why is that? What is it? What is so challenging about Tefillah? So just a couple of points I want to bring out, which I hope will shed some light on this. One idea, which is not on the sheet, but it's a beautiful idea that I saw, relates to this week's Parsha. Parsha's Chayesara, we have, of course, the Shidduch of Yitzchak and Rivka. And the Pasuk says that the first time Yitzchak sees his wife-to-be, he's in the field. The Pasuk says, Vayetze Yitzchak lo suach basode. And the Gemara darshans, this lo suach, and Rashi brings it, is a loshen tefillah. And this is the makar for tefillas mincha. Yitzchak instituted mincha. Interestingly, the Rashbam gives a different pshat in lo suach. He said, lo suach, we understand it always to mean a sicha, like a conversation. He goes out to the field to converse, and it's an expression of tefillah. But actually, the Rashbam, one of the Rishonim, the grandson of Rashi, he says that it's an expression of planting. He brings rise for it. And the point is that just as for example, siach hasodeh, the pasuk says, the vegetation. So it's an expression of planting. So what's the connection between planting and tefillah? So I once read some time ago a beautiful explanation that Rabbi Ephraim Shapiro quotes of his father, Mordechai Shapiro. I think his name is Mordechai Shapiro. He says that when you plant, the results are not immediately visible. And that's exactly the problem with tefillah, as it were. The results are there, it will happen, but it's just not immediately visible. If we, you know, one of the boys in school yesterday, I think it was, told me, we were discussing tefillah and shacharis, and he says that he finds it challenging because it's so intangible. You're praying, you know, it's almost in a vacuum, as it were. And it's so hard. That's right. That's exactly lo suach basode. Lo suach is an expression of planting, that just as planting, the results are not immediately visible. Well, so too, words as well. We don't see the immediate results. And that's one of the factors that make tefillah challenging. And another thing that makes tefillah challenging is they don't always seem to work. Sometimes we daven and daven and daven for something, and it seems like it just didn't work. And that's very disheartening. So I want to share two stories which I think will give us a little bit of perspective on this. The first story relates to a person called Nachshon Waxman. Now maybe you remember him. If I'm not mistaken, I think it was his yahrzeit recently, his 20th yahrzeit. It's a tragic story, but I think it brings out an important point. Nachshon Waxman was a chayal. He was a young man who was learning in a Hesder yeshiva, and he was a frum chayal. And he one day was hitching a lift, and it was just on the outskirts of Yerushalayim, if I'm not mistaken, and the car were sort of pulled up, just went a bit ahead of the group of people, and there were four chassidim in the car, two at the front, two at the back. There was like a chumash on the dashboard, playing Jewish music, And he thought, great, I've got a ride. The guy in the back went out so that he would get in. And when he got in and this guy got back in next to him and the car speedily drove off, he realized that he was being kidnapped. And they were actually terrorists. They were not, they were pretending to be from Jews. And within about 10 minutes, they had taken him to some sort of safe house. And the ultimatum was given that if they don't release whatever it was, 1,000 terrorists, then they would kill their victim. And the word got out. This was on a Thursday. That Thursday night, 50,000 Jews descended upon the Kaisel to pray for the safe release of Nachshon Waxman. And at the time, you know, the whole class were talking about it. What's with Nachshon, what's the latest, etc. The army had identified where he was. They somehow knew his location. And people were going into Shabbos not knowing what was going to be. Because I think the cutoff, the deadline, was 8 p.m. on that Friday night. And the army attempted a rescue mission. Sadly, it was not successful. And not only did Nachshon Waxman, it was ill-fated from the beginning because it was booby-trapped and it sadly did not work, and he lost his life. And one of the commanding officer who was leading the rescue mission also lost his life. So it was a very tragic end. On the Sunday morning, there was a big levaya. And because the whole world was talking about it, it was a particularly big and it was a televised event. And the Rosh Hashiva was going to give a hesped. The father of Nachshon Waxman, before the levaya, went up to the Rosh Hashiva and he said, "Look, I'm not a good public speaker. You're giving a hesped. I would just like you to say one thing in my name." Of course, what is that? He said, "Look, Klal Yisrael, I've got a question. How could it be that 50,000 Jews go to the coastal on Thursday night to daven for Nachshon Waxman and it didn't work? Their emunah may be shaken a little bit and people will think that tefillah doesn't work. I want you to tell them in my name that tefillah works, but just that sometimes the answer is no. And as a good parent, we also know that sometimes the answer is no, and yes is not always the right answer. We don't know the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the frustration is in thinking that the answer, there's no one listening, it's not happening, it's ineffective. There is someone listening," he said. "Tell Klal Yisrael there's someone listening, but sometimes the answer is no." I'll share with you just one other story that I read in Rabbi David Kaplan's book. He's got a few...
I don't understand. Why did it work?
The point is that to understand that the frustration comes from thinking that they're not effective, that there's no one listening. There is someone listening. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does listen, but sometimes we have to understand that the answer is no. What you're saying is a separate nekuda, is a separate point. There's a famous maaseh of the Rebbe Ari Levin, the famous tzaddik of Yerushalayim, that there was one older lady who had lost her husband, I think, or her son, I forget exactly, and Rebbe Ari Levin went to comfort her, and she asked a similar question: "What happened to all my tears? What happens?" And Rabbi Levin, just in a very comforting way, explained that the tears never go to waste. It's like energy, it just has to be directed in a different way. Who knows where your tefillahs went? It served a benefit in some other place. In respect of what you particularly wanted, that nekuda, in that area, the answer was no. The tefillah was never wasted, it was going to be directed in another way. Who knows where HaKadosh Baruch Hu can redirect the tefillah in a way that only he knows how. But the point is that sometimes, it's not that no one's listening, it's that, of course, that sometimes just the answer is no. What happens to the tefillah? It can be missed, it can be directed in a different way. David Kaplan's got many sefarim, but there's one sefer which has got lovely anecdotes which I sometimes draw on, and he's got an anecdote which is also, I think, related to this concept, which has a bearing on this discussion. I'll read it to you. Mr. Richardson had three sons. The day his oldest son turned 18, a letter arrived from a law firm. "Dear sir," it began, "an anonymous donor has sent $1 million to become your sons on the day he turns 18. Obviously, this caused a big celebration in the family. The son, Tom, took the money and bought himself a sports car. 3 weeks later, he crashed it into a pole at 90 miles an hour and was killed instantly. 2 years later, the second son, Jimmy, turned 18. On his birthday, a letter arrived. "Dear sir, an anonymous donor has left $1 million to become your sons when he turns 18. This time, a little more caution was exercised. Mr. Richardson put most of the money away, but Jimmy still had more money than most of his friends did. He used his money for drugs and eventually became a hopeless drug addict. 2 years later, the Richardson's third son, Peter, turned 18. A letter arrived in the mail with a $1 million check. The father grabbed the telephone, called the lawyer, and said, "Thank you very much, but we're not interested." "Mr. Richardson," the lawyer responded, "your son is legally an adult. You cannot decline the money for him. I can only invalidate the donation if your son declines the money." At this point, Mr. Richardson blew his stack. "Could you please tell me who keeps sending this money?" "Yes," the lawyer answered. "Over 20 years ago, you and your business partner had a nasty split. Well, he vowed to get revenge. He made a lot of money and decided the best way he could get revenge was to give $1 million to each one of your sons on the day he turned 18. It looks like he was right." So it's a tragic story. But the, you know, people often wonder why HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't give us exactly what we daven for when we ask for it. Even though we daven, you know, we don't seem to receive what we order. And the answer is sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you know, knows what we need and what we don't need. And asking for certain things may not be, in the grand scheme of things, whatever the master plan may be, not consistent with what is good for us. So we have to bear that in mind. Just one final word. You know, the last week we offered words about the importance of tefillah, the power of tefillah. Just want to share just one final point. There are many obstacles with tefillah. Please God, next week will be the final session, just discussing sort of strategies for more effective tefillah. But there's one very powerful idea of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says, why is it there are so many obstacles for tefillah? Why is it that it's one of the Dalet Dvarim, which needs constant strengthening? So the Vilna Gaon says an amazing thing. Kashem shekol ha-godl mi-chaveiro yitzre godl himenu. In the same way that the greater the person, the greater his yitzhara, the Gemara says. Says the Gaon, hu hadin legabe mitzvahs. The greater the mitzvah, the more the yitzhara tries to make us not do it. The more the resistance, the more, because he realizes what's at stake. So, on the contrary, the fact that there are so many obstacles for tefillah shows us the importance and the power of tefillah. And I think that itself is a source of chizuk as to the power of tefillah. So why is tefillah so difficult? It's like I said, it's number one, the results are not immediately visible. That's losuach basoda, says the Rashbam. Losuach is loshon of planting. But just as planting, the results are not immediately visible. Well, so too with words. And also, it doesn't seem that all our tefillahs work. But to understand that the tefillahs, sometimes the answer is no. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu just knows what's best for us, and it's not in our interest for this, it's not in the grand master plan, this is not the desired result. We just are not privy to it, that's all. So we have to daven, and we have to try and use Hishtadlus. And to also understand that there are many obstacles for tefillah, but because the Yetzer Hara, says the Vilna Gaon, recognizes the power of tefillah. Okay, leave that.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.